human healthcare, for example? It goes in streaks. There might be an epidemic of cold or flu or something. What about for in the world of pets?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of summer allergies and rashes, and we get the odd bot, you know, and the flea time is now, and the ticks in the spring. And
so we got stuck babysitting Rebecca's English bulldog, Hank, and she had a bunch of, she brought a bunch of stuff. Well, make sure he takes three of these a day because he has like allergies and his skin is dry and spray him with this and spray his front feet with this. He didn't have any of those issues at our house, but he does at her house. I'm thinking it might be something internal, like maybe cleaning supplies or something that he may be allergic to. Do you think that's possible?
We used to investigate those things. There was a company that had made a product that they claimed would cure the allergies, and they would test the dog to see what allergies rang up. And it was stuff like tree pollen, grass pollen, house dust mites, just stuff that you can't avoid no matter where you are.
I see.
But I think a lot of these houses, you know, and we've talked about this before, but the cook-off point, what they call flashover in the firefighting world, is just tremendous in these newer houses. And what it means to me is there's all kinds of fumes and chemicals in the rugs, the paneling,
off
the furniture.
Gassing.
And it just takes a whole lot less heat to just ignite the whole thing and make it flash. And I think those things have to do with the allergy response in a lot of animals.
And especially if you have like a house animal that's,
yes,
you know, cooped up all the time. Because you're at work probably.
Yeah. But even if he's outside and he's allergic to grass or trees, what are you going to do?
It just seems to me so funny that, you know, in the scheme of things, an animal would be allergic to its environment. You'd think that it would be something artificial or man-made that they would.
Yeah, it's a tribute to selective breeding.
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of strange. I was out, took a little early morning bike ride Saturday, and the ducks and the geese are starting to bunch up.
Are they?
So many of the birds have gone now. You can see all the swallows lined up on the wires getting ready to go. It's always a sad time for me when they do finally take off.
Yeah, well, part of the cycle.
I know it is. It makes me sad just the same, though. Dr. Woody, we have a whole list of questions here. I want to thank our listeners for them. Let's get to it. Our cat just had babies, and I was wondering how long it's going to be before they can start to eat solid food.
Well, a lot of people start to feed kittens at 2 weeks. Solid
2 food. Weeks?
Yeah. And you'll have the occasional orphan deal where the mom will die, and, you know, week, 10 days, you try to start them on some kind of mush with a milk mix and then off to the dry food or the hard food.
Why is it that sometimes female cats will lay a bunch of kitties and then they'll just ignore them?
Every creature has that, Bob.
Do
we
they?
Used to have that with sows.
Yeah.
The most extreme thing was they'd eat the pigs.
Yeah.
And they just aren't mothers. And I don't know if their nervous system is such that, you know, the noise and the constant irritation of the pig keeps them on edge or what the deal is, but they just don't have a maternal instinct.
And then I hear of female dogs that will lead their puppies off and ditch them and head back home again. Now, it makes me wonder if that isn't part of the evolution thing, because, you know, we had a husband and wife team of beavers that had a lodge when we lived out in Lemon by Cedar Creek. It was so much fun to go. Beth and I would carry lawn chairs and set up, and they got used to us, and we'd see them. They'd be busy. They were bank beavers. Mm-hmm. They had two little babies, and they lavished all their love on these little babies all summer until fall came, and then they started growling and nipping at them.
Oh,
and we saw them leading around the bend of the river one day. Next day, no little beaver babies to be found. The parents were still there.
I'm not sure what age they go off on their own.
It was time to go. They graduated, I guess.
Yeah,
so
well, get out of here.
Yeah, go off into the world, right? But it is kind of strange in a way that, you know, even in the animal world.
Well, then you hear these dogs that'll nurse, you know, kittens.
Yeah.
Or they'll nurse something else. It's even different species.
Yeah.
Which I always think of as an extraordinary mother.
Well, you know, they used to, like with thoroughbred horses, they would be kind of high-strung, and so they would try and find like a stable mate for them. And a lot of times it would be some golden retriever dog, real mellow, and they would lay together.
Yep.
I know people used to use goats for that, too, sometimes. But, you know, we're talking about this off mic, too. We're surrounded by animals, and we walk through this life a lot of times oblivious to the endless miracles that we're surrounded by, the hummingbirds, we were talking about them. So little we know about them.
Well, giraffes, you know. How in the world do you get that much blood up to a brain that high in the air? It just is, it, you know, you look at it from a physiological standpoint.
Yeah.
It's, how do they do that? We don't know.
They still don't know, do they? No. And it's incredible. Maybe someday we'll understand this, but in the meantime, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Man, am I blissful. Dr. Woody, we are very excited to announce that we are new puppy parents, so writes one of our listeners. We have never had a puppy before, and we're kind of learning about it for the very first time. Could you please tell us how long it's going to take us to house train our puppy?
Depends on the puppy and how effective you are with your training. There's a book written by a guy named Dunbar called The Good Little Dog Book, and I highly recommend that. If you've never had a puppy, you don't know a lot about dogs or dog training, buy it. It's $15 or something, but it's the best money you'll ever spend on a dog. His idea, and I've found this to be pretty good over the last 35 years, is that reward-based training is the most effective. You have to remember, number one, that a puppy has about a two-second attention span. So if it happens on either side of that, they don't know what you're talking about.
Right, sure.
But if you give them a reward, it's so much more effective than other methods.
So positive reinforcement is much better than negative.
Yeah, and if you ask an abused kid, would you rather have negative attention or positive, he'll always say negative. But that's because none is not acceptable.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay,
so what you want is to make it a positive experience every time you go. Take them to the same place, ignore them until they go. Within 2 seconds, give them that treat. Tell them what a good dog they are. And some dogs just don't ever get house trained. Poodles immediately come to mind. Little poodles. But the best chance you have is to start when you get them. Same thing every time, same place, routine, treat. And you'll have pretty good success as a general rule.
And I think a lot of times with dogs anyway, they're pretty anxious to please.
They are.
And so if they finally get the idea that this is what they're supposed to do, they will.
Yeah.
We have these like puppy training pads to start with. If you're not going to be home during the day, if you can get the puppy to go on that so the smell is there.
Well, there's two sides to that. They
I
can't
know.
Distinguish that from a newspaper or a magazine or your favorite shoes a lot of times. But to me, it's always best if you can get them to go outside and, again, pick the same place where the smells are and a reward as soon as they go.
So enjoy that new puppy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. Nothing like the love of a dog, and that's for sure. You know, I've been reading online, but all the diseases that I might not even know that my pets have or could get. Dr. Woody, should my cats and dog get tested for some of these hidden diseases or ailments? And what lab work would you recommend that I have performed?
This is a how hard can you chase your tail question.
Paranoid pet owner.
Well, there are diseases. And, you know, some come to mind. Like, for example, if you're a young person and you're married and you're trying to start a family and your wife is pregnant, you don't want to have a toxoplasmosis cat. You know, you can abort the child. So that may be one thing you want to consider. If you get a dog from a shelter somewhere and you don't know much about him and he comes from a place where there are large animals or wildlife, he may have leptospirosis, which is zoonotic. You can get it, and it'll give you a kidney infection. You don't want that. Unfortunately, people don't have unlimited pocketbooks, and to have an idea, you need to know kind of what you want to test for. So it's a very difficult thing. You know, if you have something in the animal's history that points you in a direction, that's kind of the way you work.
An indication of something.
Or a possible history.
So scattergun theory probably is not the...
Well, there's just so darn many things that you could spend thousands of dollars and not be any better informed than you were to start with.
So the best advice would be hold off maybe on getting a pet or having a pet until after that little baby is born, maybe?
Well, just take precautions.
Okay.
You know, when I was in Illinois, they said that the statistics were 78% of the population had titers for toxoplasmosis.
What was that number?
78%. Just unbelievable. Well, how do you get it? You get it from contaminated fecal material in the backyard where some stray cats come and poop that has it.
Okay.
You get it from eating raw meat.
Okay.
You know, if
you're
pregnant, don't dig in the dirt with your hands without gloves. Don't eat raw meat. You know, be real scrupulous about having somebody else dump a kitty box. they're just precautions that you can take. And I guess we're sort of more about precautions than we are about speculative diagnosis of diseases that may or may not be there.
But a lot of times that's the smart thing, you know, to be preemptive.
I think so.
Yeah, rather than reactive. Yeah,
seems like.
Dr. Woody, like humans, we take vitamins every day, and I was wondering, should my dog take them? Are there supplements, or can I give them natural remedies that would help ensure his good health?
Well, again, the natural remedy thing or the, you know, off-label type of stuff is sort of out there. Nobody knows efficacy.
They make all kinds of claims.
They do, yeah, and it probably doesn't hurt, but it may not help you much either. Most of the time, it's considered that a balanced diet, a reasonably decent diet, is adequate in vitamins and minerals, trace minerals for dogs. There are vitamin supplements out there. Pet Tabs is the old standby, used to be made by Norden. And we have them, and people use them. People that have pregnant animals like them. They have extra calcium, extra magnesium. They have, you know, levels of different vitamins. And there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not sure that the jury is in, you know, about are they necessary, are they not.
What about premium kinds of pet food? You know, you think that there are some out there that, I mean, they're really scientifically blended, and they probably have everything that that particular pet needs at that stage in their life.
Well, that can be kind of a loaded question, Bob. You are required by law to have certain levels of nutrients. You are not required by law to have a certain quality of ingredient. So
okay. You
can have chicken beaks and peanut shells, and you can feed that to your dog, and there's no problem with that. I mean, people do that all the time. But the higher quality food that you have, generally translation of that is more expensive,
sure,
because the ingredients are more expensive.
Right.
Generally, the better is the prospect that you're going to have adequate vitamin, trace mineral, nutrition. And I don't know that there are any out there that can, you know, send out a substandard product in terms of vitamins that can get along very, very long, because they're just, you know, won't hold up. You'll have a deficiency.
You know, there's so much contradictory evidence, Dr. Woody, about that. I once read that, you know, some of the premium dog foods contain, say, chicken, lamb, or rice, and then you read later that, oh, you never want to feed your pets rice because of the strychnine that may be in the husks, and, you know, so who do you believe?
Well, we learn something new every day. The most recent thing I read is there is a correlation between gluten-free pet diets.
Do they make that?
Which is a deal.
They do.
Yep. And cardiomyopathy. Heart failure from the muscle failure in your heart. And, you know, we used to have that in cats 30 years ago. We would have these cats that come in and they'd be all excited, and people would pull them out from under the seat by the tail, you know, stressing them out. Generally, it was a big old fat cat, and they'd bring them in, plunk them on the table, and they'd look up at the sky and drop over dead. And what it was there's an amino acid called taurine that is absolutely essential for cats.
Really?
And if you don't feed it, you'll get that myocardial death or failure, if you want to say. So that was something they didn't know then.
Is that a natural occurring substance?
You can get it in nature if you eat rats and mice,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, you got if you take that away and you feed them something out of a can or a box or a bag, then you take the responsibility for having adequate levels of these amino acids and all this other stuff. And it's just an illustration, like you say, if we go through life and we don't know. And whether or not this gluten-free business is related to myocardial failure, I don't know. Hard to say.
The thing that amazes me is someone was able to figure out that was a cause of this, you know?
Well, it's the way you investigate. If you have a bunch of deaths or a bunch of illnesses, it's like the McDonald's salad making 600 people sick.
Yeah.
What do you do? You
sure.
Go back to the common exposures. Well, what did you eat at McDonald's? You eat a quarter pounder and a big stack of fries. Not to worry. Do you have the salad? Oh, well, let me talk to you. So they look back in the history of these things, and the thing they find in this common denominator, oh, yeah, my dog has been on gluten-free for the last 6 months.
Okay.
2 years. That's
sure.
The way they flag that stuff.
So they go back and establish a commonality then.
And then they have to find out, is that really causative?
Sure.
which is where they are in this process.
So don't feed your dogs McDonald's salad. It'll be okay.
Quarter pounder safer.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, it's kind of funny, isn't it? Because so many people think, well, I'm going to eat healthy. I'm going to eat salads and I'll be safe from all of this. And
you're riskier with salad than you are with anything.
Yeah, you know, and I read the last big outbreak that they had, it was iceberg lettuce, and the water was coming from a canal, I guess, that I'm not sure if it had feedlot runoff in it or what it was, but it contained the, you know.
Well, as the world gets warmer and water gets tighter and more precious as a commodity, we're going to have to pay more and more and more attention to what we put on these crops and vegetables that we eat. For example, Blue Bunny. There's not a strawberry that Blue Bunny sells on ice cream that's grown in this country.
It's really?
It's all grown in Mexico.
Oh, sure.
And it's grown on their own place with their own processing, their own water supply. So there's not going to be any of this, well, I got E. coli from the Blue Bunny ice cream. I mean, in the strawberries, you know that. And I don't know if we're going to see more and more of that. It seems to me kind of an extreme thing to do, but that's the way they do it.
Yeah.
And we may see more of that in the future.
So I had a friend that worked for the USDA in California, and they were trying to test as many of the locally produced products that were entering into the American food market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, we're lucky if we can even catch 3%. You know, they go out to some place and they have 20 tons of something picked. And he said, so we go and take random samples. Yeah. And now this is one farm, but now there's 80 farms up the road that we don't have time or manpower to do.
Right.
So I mean, it's going to fall through the cracks,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. You bet.
And pet food, people probably don't pay a whole lot of attention to the ingredients that they give their pets. So.
Yeah, that's right.
There's just so many worries in life. Dr. Woody, we have a cat just turned 7. And I see now that he's starting to move a little slower than before. I suppose it's old age. What can I do to improve his quality of life?
Well, we didn't used to pay a lot of attention to arthritis in cats, but anymore it's starting to become a kind of a deal. And there are products out there that can help with joint health in cats. Cosequin, Dosequin are a couple of different ones. They're a sort of a nutritional supplement that helps to heal up joints and build cartilage. Those are the kind of things you can consider. And if he's really arthritic and beyond the reach of something like that, you can give him an anti-arthritic medication. And there are a lot of things that you can do. You know, a lot of times older cats are overweight. And if you're overweight, arthritis is a whole different deal than if you're not. So you can make him lose some weight, get a little joint supplementation in there, maybe an anti-inflammatory if you need it. You know, play around with some medications. It happens.
I know people, and maybe dogs as well, if they're overweight, it strains their joints.
Yeah.
You know, and cats same way?
Yeah, same thing. Cats are built lighter. They have it's an interesting thing. Cats have a fairly low terminal velocity. Like if you throw them off a 100-story building, they don't accelerate to 130 like people do. They stop at about 65. And it has to do with the way the cat is put together. The relative mass, the lightness of their bones relative to the mass of the cat. And I think a lot of times they're kind of like a flying squirrel. You know, they get a lot of lift from that. Anyway, those animals tend to suffer less from arthritis because there's not so much concentrated weight. But they do still get it. And if you got an old 25-pounder that lies on a couch all day, he's probably a good candidate.
And I suppose it kind of perpetuates itself, too. If you have this overweight cat, it doesn't feel like being active. Yeah. And because it's inactive, it's going to get even more. And so it just continues to spiral.
And nobody ever cuts the food back. You know, they always...
Well, sure, because when you're eating, a cat's out there going, meow, meow, you know, wants to eat. So that's the hard thing, too. You're eating supper, and the dog sits there and gives you the old brown eyes. It's kind of hard not to, you know, Beth gets so mad, she'll go... Get that dog out of here. Keep looking at me. It's like, so? It's just a dog. Yeah, but I don't like it. So, I guess we all have our distractions, but
He's picking on the weakest link.
You know, that's probably true. The easiest touch, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, sneaking food under the table. You're not supposed to do that. Dr. Woody, I think my dog's pregnant. When can I bring her in for an x-ray?
Well, we talked about this, I think, last time. That supposedly the minimal age that you can see calcification is 19 days. So,
could you use one of those EPT tests for humans on a dog?
They have progesterone tests that you can use. I don't know if that's in a weaponized kit or not. You can sure take a blood sample.
Weaponized and, kit?
And find out that way.
Makes you wonder, though, doesn't it, kind of? I mean, maybe the amount would be so much less it wouldn't show, but I don't know.
No, they can dose it up, you know, they can make it sensitive enough that it'll show. But when you get pregnant, then the thing called a corpus luteum takes over, and that's the thing that produces the progesterone, keeps you from coming in heat, maintains the pregnancy. So that's what you measure. Now, sometimes it's difficult if you just get one level. You know, they're arbitrary guy, over such and such is a positive and under such and such. But you may have one that naturally secretes more. You just never know.
Here's a totally random thought that I just thought of. They had a Kiss the Pig contest this weekend. Chief Erickson lost, had to kiss the pig, just so you know. Yeah. I don't know if he wore lipstick or if the pig did. Part of a fundraising effort.
The question is, did he get influenza?
Yeah, you know, and I can remember back in the day they'd have, like, greased pig contests at the county fair. They won't let you do that anymore. And you're not supposed to, I don't know, rodeos, I guess. PETA's trying to crack down on those, too.
Yeah, they're getting pretty radical about that stuff.
You know, what do you, this is totally off filter here too, Doctor. What are your thoughts about circuses and elephants?
I think there's a tremendous amount of abuse of elephants that goes on because of neglect.
Neglect.
The first time when I was in veterinary school, we had an elephant as a patient. And it wasn't a very old elephant, but it was the saddest thing because it was suffering from tetanus. It had stepped on a rusty nail, and nobody knew that it had stepped on a nail, and nobody had vaccinated it for tetanus. And I'm not even sure at the time that there was even a vaccine or you know, a serum that was able to protect.
Right.
But it was the saddest thing. And you had this, you know, big elephant, young elephant, and he's just hanging around, and there's nothing you can do for him.
Will they get lockjaw then because
Absolutely.
Of that? Really?
Die right away.
It just breaks my heart.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it is.
And again, it's a disease of neglect.
Yeah.
And, you know, you always hear about, well, this one's malnourished and that one didn't get enough to eat and so on and so on and so on. And it always makes me sad.
My daughter, Rebecca, wants me to turn my farm into an elephant preserve.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And she said, how much think it would cost to buy an elephant? And I said, I think it would cost a lot, but I think it would cost you a lot more to feed it every month.
Well, not only that, but you'd have to get a permit for it.
Would you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I suppose, yeah, a wild animal,
exotic
right?
Exotic animal, sure.
Yeah. So, see, I don't know. In the wild, I know that they're disappearing and being hunted to extinction.
Yep.
I used to think that, well, circuses at least then would offer some genetic refuge. But I don't know, after I've read some of the things that the, you know, they use the bull hooks and they keep them chained.
Yeah.
And
well, a lot of times they neuter them because they're more manageable. You know, they're less temperamental. The most recent thing I saw, I can't remember where it was, South Africa or somewhere, but they were talking about trying to raise these black rhinoceros as a commercial enterprise.
Like buffalo.
Yeah, and sell the horn. Dehorn them and sell the horn.
I see.
To, you know,
offset the
jump into that
sure.
market and kind of cut back on the poach. But I don't know, you know, again, like you say, they eat just tons and tons and tons of food, and I don't know whether I think a lot of times the more you meddle with it, the worse it gets.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. But there's, you know, one of those sad things too,
yes,
isn't there? You know,
isn't
so it? If let your conscience be your guide. If you want to be like Rebecca and donate money to a different national a wildlife fund, you can certainly find that online, and you can do that if that will make you feel better.
Well, what's the biggest threat to hunting here?
The biggest threat to hunting? Well, people taking away guns, I suppose.
No, it's the loss of habitat.
Oh, true. Yeah.
That's the thing, you know, if you want to provide for wild animals, and then it goes from pheasants forever to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, when I came here, I said, well, why don't you stock pheasants instead of buy ground? Oh, no, the stocked ones don't survive.
Yeah.
You got to have habitat for them. Well, yeah, give them habitat.
You know, and I read that, too, pheasants forever. If you release pen-reared pheasants into the wild, there's a 90% mortality the first year. You have to have a wild hen instill.
Absolutely.
And she might have 15 little babies, but only three of them survive. So,
yeah,
I mean,
they all know how to survive.
That's right, yeah. And The pen-raised ones are like chickens. They'll come up and scratch corn in the yard, and they're kind of domestic. So, you know, that sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. We have a three-year-old Cocker Spaniel, Dr. Woody. He recently started barking in the middle of the night and will come and wake us up. What do you think the reason is behind this, and how can we stop this behavior?
Well, I'd get this rascal checked to see if there's some kind of a thing that's bugging him nights. You know, there may be a parasite.
Boogeyman.
Could be an ear problem. Who knows what? 3 years old is a little young for dementia. There is a dementia that will present like this, but generally it's in an older dog.
Do Cocker Spaniels have, like, breed-related ailments?
Terrible.
They do.
Rotten ears, iffy temperament.
Swelling brain?
Well, I don't know. Dog breeds are driven by popularity. It's like the kid that won't eat anything he doesn't see on TV, you know? You know, remember the Checker speech with Nixon? That's when Cocker Spaniels really started getting started. Because Checkers was a Cocker Spaniel. Everybody wanted to be like Pat. And then when the Taco Bell had the Chihuahuas, Los Angeles shelters were awash in Chihuahuas. And it just goes that way.
Yeah, I know. People are so trendy.
When it goes that way, then you don't get very selective about breeding. You just see, well, geez, I can get $1,000 if I sell a puppy.
Oh, sure.
What the heck?
Yeah.
But yeah, Cocker Spaniels have bounced back, and the English Cocker has been a little better policed and not so, you know, popularly bred. But they do have ear problems. They do have some vision problems occasionally. They do have a couple other things.
It makes you wonder if the dog barks during the day also, you know?
Right. And he could just be bored, but, you know, there may be some other cause.
Sure. But it's probably a good idea to maybe schedule an appointment and have them checked out,
absolutely,
just to make sure that you can eliminate your worries or something, you know, really bad down the road. I've heard that a microchip might not be a good idea to have implanted in your dog. Do you suggest that we have our new puppy microchip, Dr. Woody?
I don't see a downside to microchips at all. There are some problems with them. for example, if you have a dog, particularly in some of these rural areas, that gets loose and he's caught by an animal control officer, they may not have a reader.
Okay.
But as a general rule, if you've got him chipped, almost every place reads for a chip.
They're not very big, are they, the chip, the implant?
A quarter of an inch long or so.
Just amazes me, that technology.
You remember the old implants that you used to use for cattle ears?
Sure. Yeah. Stibestrol or whatever?
It's that size.
It is. That like a little grain of rice, same shape?
Same kind of thing, about that long.
Yeah.
A little bigger than the lead and the lead pencil.
Maybe someday they'll be able to track your missing pet by a satellite.
Well, they're working on that. They're working on GPS incorporation in those things, and I'm not sure where they are with it, but I heard about it and I didn't hear about it. So
they have those in hunting dogs now, though.
They?
Yeah, they have a special collar that you
collar
can get, and that way, you know, if he chases a deer and, and gets lost in a cornfield,
you
if you have
him.
Your smartphone, you can find him, which it's kind of
pretty
nice.
Handy. You bet.
Dr. Woody, I've got my cat's litter box in a secluded area for privacy, but it seems my cat does not like it there. Should I move it into a more open or public place?
You have to distinguish there between does the cat not like the litter box or does it not like the place. Sometimes they resent a dirty litter box, and we have people that have to change the litter and scrub the box every day or the cat won't use it.
Our last question is, I've noticed the last few days my 5-year-old English Pointer's been eating a lot of grass. Why? He's never done it before.
Gastrointestinal upset. It's
really
what they do when they get upset. I think it's a natural thing where if they've eaten something that doesn't agree with them or that's toxic, they eat the grass to try and encourage himself to throw up.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. If you see that, you just know they're upset from something.
And we want to thank our listeners for their questions. We also want to remind them about the new website that you have up and running. Dr. Woody, what is it?
It's Brookings Animal Clinic at BACL at swifthill.net.
Stop it.
And there's stuff to read, and you can listen to old radio
shows.
Yeah,
archive programs if you have a particular question. And you have a pretty long reach. We go back a long ways, Dr. Woody, have covered a lot of ground. And you know what?
I
look forward to the Mondays that you're coming in, and it's always a pleasure. People want to call and talk to you.
692-2815.
Well, you know what? I think we might have a little rain shower here. So roll up the windows in the car, and Dr.
All
Woody,
right.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you much. Take care. And that's a wrap for me. I want to thank you all for letting me